Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you're not currently affiliated with a community, church, or synagogue and would like to be part of the larger Beth Emmanuel family, you can apply for long-distance membership at BethEmmanuel.org/membership.
Most Christians know the story of Pentecost in Acts 2, the mighty wind, the tongues of fire, the Holy Spirit, and the apostles speaking in every language. Most, however, are unaware of the significant background behind the story. The church holiday, known as Pentecost, was not originally a church holiday at all. The festival goes back to the days of Moses. Christianity celebrates Pentecost as the day that the Holy Spirit descended upon the apostles in tongues of fire. But the first Pentecost happened in the Old Testament at Mount Sinai. Long before the tongues of fire fell upon the disciples in Jerusalem, the fire fell upon Mount Sinai. Just as Passover memorializes the Exodus from Egypt, Pentecost memorializes the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. For that reason, Pentecost is called the Festival of Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. Both the English and Hebrew names for the festival refer to the counting of the Omer. The English name Pentecost derives from the Greek for 50th day, Pentecoste. The Hebrew Shavuot means weeks, a name related to the 7 weeks, 49 days, of the counting of the Omer. The counting links Passover to Shavuot with a chain of 49 days. In this sense, Shavuot concludes the festival season that began at Passover. On the first Shavuot, the children of Israel were encamped at Mount Sinai after a 50-day journey through the wilderness. When the Torah says, Israel camped in front of the mountain, Exodus 19:2, it uses a singular form of the verb camped. The sages derive from this that the people came to Mount Sinai in perfect unity, and they encamped as if they were one man. They merited to receive the revelation of the Torah because of their unity of spirit. The book of Acts alludes to that interpretation in the introduction to the Pentecost story. When the day of Pentecost had come, they were all with one accord in one place. On the first Shavuot, a thick, dark cloud covered Mount Sinai. The whole mountain shook and trembled as the sound of a loud ram's horn, trumpet, a shofar, split the air. God spoke, and all Israel heard his voice. To commemorate the day that he gave his Torah to Israel, the Lord commanded the children of Israel to observe the day of Shavuot as an appointed time. 1,400 years later, when the disciples of the risen Messiah gathered to celebrate Shavuot in Jerusalem, they were doing so to celebrate the anniversary of the giving of the Torah. The festival that year carried heightened significance for them because it came 50 days after the day of their master's resurrection. When the day of Pentecost came, they were all together in one place. Suddenly, a sound like the blowing of a violent wind came from heaven and filled the whole house where they were sitting. They saw what seemed to be tongues of fire that separated and came to rest on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues as the Spirit enabled them. Shavuot occurs on Sivan 6. In the diaspora where the Yom Tov is doubled, the holiday straddles Sivan 6 and 7, but Jewish tradition states that Sivan 6 is the anniversary of the giving of the Torah. The miracles of the mighty wind, the tongues of fire, and the speaking in other languages allude to the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. Jewish tradition regards Shavuot as the anniversary of the day on which God descended onto Sinai and spoke the Ten Commandments. On the festival of Shavuot, synagogues read the story of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 19 and 20. On the first Shavuot, signs and wonders accompanied the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. The voice of God spoke audibly to an entire nation. According to tradition, God's voice divided into 70 voices, speaking in 70 different tongues, and those voices looked like hot sparks flying forth from a hammer's blows on a stone. The voice of God appeared to Israel like hot burning torches descending like sparks. According to Genesis 10, the nations of the world descended from 70 original families. The 70 tongues is idiomatic for all the languages of the nations. The disciples in the book of Acts were familiar with Jewish tradition associated with Shavuot. They interpreted the events, which are recorded in Acts 2, as a reenactment of the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. They knew the rabbinic legends about the words of fire dividing into 70 languages as they left the mouth of God. They knew the story of God's voice speaking to all mankind in every tongue. Those legends gave significance to the miracles and signs and wonders that they experienced on the anniversary of the giving of the Torah. The tongues of fire and utterances in every tongue pointed directly to the Mount Sinai experience and underscored a connection between the Holy Spirit and the Holy Torah. They experienced the day of Pentecost as a second giving of the Torah. On the day of Shavuot, Yeshua's disciples gathered in the temple courts to observe the festival. On the day of his ascension, Yeshua had told them to remain in the city until they were clothed with power from on high, and Luke says that they remained continually in the temple blessing God. In addition, the Torah required them to be present in Jerusalem and in the temple on Shavuot because it is one of the three pilgrimage festivals. In the days of the apostles, Jews converged on Jerusalem from Judea, Galilee, Syria, and as Luke explains in Acts 2:7-11, from all over the Roman and Parthian empires. The population of Jerusalem swelled beyond capacity during the festival. Since the Torah makes it incumbent upon every Jewish male to present himself before the Lord on Shavuot, the disciples of Yeshua were among large throngs of festival pilgrims when the sound of a rushing wind came upon them and the tongues of fire descended. When the apostles proclaimed the good news, their words spilled out in other languages. Jews who had come up from various places in the wide first century diaspora recognized their homeland languages and wondered over it. Ever since the destruction of the temple, the commandment to make pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the festival no longer applies. When the temple is rebuilt in the Messianic era, however, the Shavuot pilgrimages will resume. In the days of the apostles, many of the pilgrims ascending to the temple to celebrate Shavuot carried with them the first fruits of their agricultural produce. Shavuot is a harvest festival with an agricultural dimension. The Torah refers to Shavuot as a harvest festival and a festival of first fruits. You shall keep the feast of harvest, of the first fruits of your labor, of what you sow in the field, Exodus 23:16. This pertains to the agricultural cycle. In the land of Israel, the first of the barley crop ripens around Passover time. The barley is reaped and threshed during the days of the counting of the Omer. While the farmers harvest the barley, the wheat crop is still ripening. By the time Shavuot arrives, the wheat is ripe and ready for harvest. In the days of the temple, the priesthood offered the first fruits of the wheat harvest in the form of two loaves of leavened bread waved before the Lord on Shavuot. By designating it the time for offering the first fruits of your labor, the Torah indicates that Shavuot is an appropriate time for farmers in Israel to bring the first fruits of all their produce to the temple. Farmers in the land of Israel set aside the first fruits of all the produce of the ground, Deuteronomy 26:2, and presented it at the sanctuary before the Lord. The requirement of setting aside first fruits applied only to the seven species for which the Torah praises the land of Israel: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. The Mishnah explains the details. How do farmers separate the first fruits? When a man goes into his field and sees the first fig has ripened, the first grape cluster has ripened, the first pomegranate has ripened, he ties it with a reed and declares, "Behold, these are first fruits." In the days of the apostles, joyous processions of festival pilgrims converged on Jerusalem from all over the land of Israel to bring the first fruits to the temple for the festival of Shavuot. The pilgrims carried baskets containing the first fruits of their produce. The wealthy among them carried baskets overlaid with silver and gold. The poor carried wicker baskets made from peeled willow branches. The Mishnah says, all the villagers in a district gathered in the central town of the district, and they sleep outside in the open courtyards of the town and would not enter houses lest someone die and render everyone inside unclean. At dawn, the district officer would say, quoting Jeremiah 31:6, "Arise and let us go up to Zion, to the Lord our God." Those who lived close to Jerusalem brought figs and grapes, but those who came from afar brought figs and raisins. An ox walked before them, its horns gilded in gold and an olive wreath on its head. a flutist played before them until they arrived at Jerusalem. And all the merchants of Jerusalem came out to meet them and called out, "Brothers, men of such and such a place, come in peace." A flutist plays before them until they reach the Temple Mount. On arriving at the temple, the pilgrims presented their first fruits to the priesthood, who offered them before the altar as a wave offering. The man presenting the first fruits recited the declaration in Deuteronomy 26, 5-11, verbatim. The outpouring of the Spirit upon the disciples described in Acts 2 took place in the context of this celebration over the first fruits. The nation of Israel can be considered to be a first fruits of the harvest of all humanity. Israel is the first among the nations to accept the kingship of God. On the first Shavuot, the people of Israel entered into covenant with God and became the holy nation. The Lord said, "You shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples. Although all the earth is mine, you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." The disciples of Yeshua can be considered to be a first fruits of the kingdom. In the Messianic era, the revelation of God and His Messiah will be universal. Through the outpouring of the Spirit, the disciples received a down payment of the future universal outpouring. "In the last days that shall be," God declares, "that I will pour out my Spirit on all flesh." 3,000 were added to their number that day, a first fruits of the full harvest of souls. On Shavuot, the priesthood offered the first fruits of the new wheat harvest in the form of 2 loaves of leavened bread. "You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall present a new grain offering to the Lord. You shall bring in from your dwelling places 2 loaves of bread for a wave offering, made of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour, baked with leaven as first fruits to the Lord." On the first day of the counting of the Omer, the priests offered a wave offering of unleavened bread made from the first fruits of the barley harvest. Now, 50 days later, they offer another bread offering. This time, instead of 1 loaf, the bread offering consists of 2 loaves. Instead of barley, it's made from fine flour, that is, wheat flour. Instead of being made unleavened, it's made leavened. That's because Shavuot is intended to be the conclusion, the Atzeret, of Passover. The 49 days of the Omer attach it to Passover. Why did the priests offer 2 loaves on Shavuot instead of 1, as they did on the first day of the Omer? Expositors have offered a variety of explanations, but on the simplest level, the double portion indicates the bounty of the harvest. Why did the priests prepare the bread offerings of Shavuot of leavened bread, chametz, when all the other bread offerings in the temple were made unleavened, matzah? The Torah specifically indicates that leavened bread can be used as a grain offerings of first fruits. Leviticus 2:11-12 says, "No grain offering that you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven nor any honey as a food offering to the Lord. As an offering of first fruits, you may bring them to the Lord, but they shall not be offered on the altar for a pleasing aroma." The first fruits offering of the barley omer needed to be unleavened matzah, since it was offered during the festival of unleavened bread. Therefore, only the 2 loaves of Shavuot enjoy the distinction of being prepared leavened. The priests waved the 2 loaves as a wave offering, but because they were leavened, they did not treat them as an ordinary grain offering. They did not offer any part of the 2 loaves on the altar. But why make this special exception on Shavuot? Why are the 2 loaves leavened? Expositors have offered a variety of ideas, but the simplest explanation is that it teaches us about the completion of the process started back at Passover. Back at Passover, the old culture of leaven was thrown out of households, and households started with a fresh batch of dough. It takes a while to establish a starter dough. By Shavuot, the process that began at Passover, when the old leaven was thrown out, has now matured into a new culture, so to speak. The process has come to a completion. Think about it this way. When the children of Israel left Egypt, they were leaving behind the culture of slavery, idolatry, and immorality that had defined their identity in Egypt. For 49 days, they traveled through the wilderness. Then, on the 50th day, they received a new culture to replace the one they had left behind. On the 50th day, they received the Torah. Since the destruction of the temple, the Jewish people can no longer fulfill the pilgrimage to Jerusalem, offer up their first fruits, present the 2 loaves, or offer the additional sacrifices required by the Torah. Instead, Shavuot is celebrated in synagogues and homes with various traditions and observances that have evolved over time. One custom involves the reading of the Book of Ruth. The agricultural significance of the festival explains why the Book of Ruth is read in the synagogue as one of the holiday readings for the festival of Shavuot. Naomi and Ruth came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest, Ruth 1:22. Boaz allowed Ruth to glean in his fields, quote, until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. Those details make the story of Ruth into a seasonal one connected with the days of the Omer and the festival of Shavuot. Another reason the Book of Ruth is read at Shavuot has to do with King David. According to tradition, King David was born on the festival of Shavuot and also died on his birthday. In the synagogue, King David's birthday and Yahrzeit are honored by reading the story of his great-grandparents, Ruth and Boaz. Incidentally, the Apostle Peter alluded to the tradition about King David's death when, on the day of Shavuot, he addressed the crowds of pilgrims in the temple, saying, "Brothers, I may say to you with confidence about the patriarch David that he both died and was buried, and his tomb is with us to this day." Acts 2:29. Ruth, the Moabitess, is the iconic convert from the nations. She is the token Gentile of the Tanakh who deliberately chose to be part of the people of God when she said, "Your people will be my people, your God will be my God." The reading of the Book of Ruth on Shavuot reminds us of how the message of the harvest of souls that started on the day of Pentecost will spread out to all nations. The romantic story of Ruth and Boaz also reminds us that Shavuot is a sort of wedding anniversary for God and Israel. After all, a wedding is really a covenant ceremony, not entirely unlike the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. Shavuot is like a wedding anniversary. On the day of Shavuot, the synagogue is decorated with flowers and greenery for the festival day. It feels like it's being decorated for a wedding. Then we take out the Torah and read the story of Exodus 19-20, the story of the giving of the Torah. When we come to the part of the story when God begins to speak from Mount Sinai, everyone stands up for the reading of the Ten Commandments. At Mount Sinai, God acted like a suitor asking for Israel's hand in marriage, so to speak. He said, "If you will keep my covenant, you will be my people and I will be your God." Jewish literature describes the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai as a betrothal and a wedding. God was the bridegroom. The nation of Israel was the bride. In a traditional Jewish wedding, the bride and groom are married beneath a canopy called a chuppah. The word is used in several places in the Bible. For example, the prophet Joel says, "Let the bridegroom come out of his room and the bride out of her chuppah." Joel 2:16. Psalm 19:5 speaks of the bridegroom coming out of his chuppah. The chuppah symbolizes the new house being formed by the union of bride and groom. Was there a chuppah at Mount Sinai? The cloud of glory over the mountain can be compared to a chuppah. A similar image appears in the prophecies of Isaiah. Isaiah says that in the Messianic age, God will spread a canopy of cloud over Jerusalem. Isaiah 4:5 says, "Then the Lord will create over the whole area of Mount Zion and over all her assemblies a cloud by day, even smoke, and the brightness of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory will be a chuppah." Mount Sinai itself is sometimes likened to a chuppah. Exodus 19:17 says that the people stood beneath the mountain. This can be compared to a bride standing beneath the bridal canopy of the chuppah. One should not take a statement like this literally. It is intended to cement the image of the wedding at Mount Sinai in our minds. In a traditional Jewish wedding, a marriage contract is read aloud to the bride and groom as part of the covenant ceremony. This written contract is called the ketubah. The ketubah spells out the terms and conditions incumbent upon the man and the woman. After the ceremony, witnesses sign the ketubah. In Jewish tradition, the ketubah is displayed in the home as evidence that the marriage is legal. The rabbis referred to the Torah as the ketubah that God gave to his bride. It's the wedding document between God and Israel. In some synagogues, there is a special tradition of actually taking out a special ketubah scroll and reading a wedding ketubah before the reading of the Ten Commandments. In other synagogues, there are special liturgical poems for the occasion. It's customary in Jewish homes to serve a dairy meal on Erev Shavuot. Ordinarily, meat is preferred for a Yom Tov meal, but on the eve of this festival, a dairy meal is served, usually with fish as the main course. Why? A variety of explanations compete over the meaning of the tradition, but the custom may have originated in the Torah's juxtaposition of the commandment of first fruits and the prohibition on cooking a goat in its mother's milk. Exodus 23:19 says, "The best of the first fruits of your ground you shall bring into the house of the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk." The meal cannot begin before dark because you cannot begin Shavuot early. You have to wait until dark before you can pray the evening prayers for Shavuot, recite the Kiddush, or eat your festive meal. Why? Because the Bible requires us to celebrate Shavuot after the full 49 days of the Omer have elapsed. If one did any of these things before dark, he would fail to fulfill the commandment of celebrating Shavuot on the 50th day. You have to wait for that last one, the 49th day of the Omer, to conclude before the festival can begin. Another late-night Shavuot festival custom involves an all-night Torah study called Tikkun Leil Shavuot, rectification of the night of Shavuot. According to Jewish legend, the Jewish people at Mount Sinai slept in on the morning of Shavuot and nearly missed the whole giving of the Torah because sleep is sweet in the summer. Moses had to go through the camp and wake them. To compensate for such sloth and lack of alacrity, a custom was created to spend the entire night studying Torah and then conduct Shavuot prayer services with the reading of the Ten Commandments at the earliest hour possible. After staying up all night learning Torah, Jewish men will then take part in an early morning Shacharit service. The goal is to say the Shema right at sunrise. Shavuot synagogue services at 5 a.m. are not uncommon. During the early morning synagogue service, the Ten Commandments are read from the Torah. In this way, the Jewish people rectify the lethargy of the nation at Sinai and demonstrate their eagerness to receive the revelation. This custom can be compared with the alacrity of the early believers who were already in the temple before the third hour of the day to observe the festival. The all-night Bible study isn't for everyone. Experience has taught me that I get a lot more out of the holy day after I get a solid night of sleep. In Messianic synagogues, we also remember the story in Acts 2, and we celebrate the giving of the gift of the Holy Spirit. In my home synagogue, we read Acts 2 over the course of 2 days of the festival. On the first day of Shavuot, we read Acts 2, 1 through 21, and on the second day, we finish the chapter. This works well because in the diaspora, the Book of Ruth is reserved for the second day, and is the celebration of King David's birthday and his yahrzeit. In the second half of Acts 2, Peter makes reference to King David's death. Thus we observe Shavuot as the anniversary of the giving of the Torah and the anniversary of the day that God poured out his Holy Spirit on the disciples of Yeshua. We remember both of these stories, and we celebrate the two great gifts that came to us in these stories. These two gifts work together. The Torah is God's gift, and the Spirit is God's gift. Shavuot draws a line of connection between Exodus 19 and Acts 2. The festival superimposes the giving of the Spirit in Jerusalem over the giving of the Torah at Sinai, thereby inseparably linking the two events. Jeremiah the prophet foresaw something like this when the Almighty declared through him, "This is the new covenant which I will make with the house of Israel after those days. I will put my Torah within them, and on their heart I will write it." Ezekiel the prophet foresaw this when God declared through him, "I will put my Spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances." According to these prophets, God gives the Holy Spirit in order to place his Torah within the believer's heart. The Spirit within the disciple of Yeshua and the Torah of God must be in agreement. Both are from the same God, and God is one. The Spirit and the Torah work together, in concert, to direct the believer's life. Shavuot commemorates and celebrates two great gifts, the giving of the Torah and the giving of the Spirit. The Torah and the Spirit are both revelations of God, which will be universal in the coming kingdom, when the Torah goes forth from Zion and the Spirit is poured out on all flesh. For the Jewish people, Shavuot is like a wedding anniversary between God and Israel. It comes after the 49 days of the Omer as a conclusion to the Passover festival. In the days of the temple, the festival had agricultural significance in connection with the barley and wheat harvests, connecting it to the story of Ruth and Boaz. Farmers in the land of Israel offered up the first fruits of their produce on Shavuot, a tradition that reminds us of the spiritual significance of the festival when Israel became the first fruits of the nations and the disciples of Yeshua became the first fruits of the kingdom. Shavuot points us to the future kingdom, when the trumpet sounded at Mount Sinai will be echoed by the trumpet of Messiah, and the Spirit of God will enlighten every man.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.